selling ivory to help conservation. That's the pitch Zimbabwe is making to the world as it tries to support a growing elephant population. Is an ethical ivory trade possible, or just a slippery slope to more slaughter? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I am Hashim Ahlbarra. Zimbabwe has an elephant problem. Far from being endangered, their numbers have grown steadily, especially since the world banned ivory trading. Now, Zimbabwe and others want that ban lifted, saying it will help protect the animals. We'll bring in our guests shortly after this report from Leah Harding.
Showing the wares of a trade blacklisted for decades, Zimbabwe wants this ivory on the market, legally. It's invited ambassadors from around the world to view its heavily guarded stockpile, believed to be worth $600 million. Zimbabwe says selling the tusks would help it pay for better conservation.
Conservation is indeed an expensive venture. We kindly request the support of EU for Zimbabwe to be allowed a one-off sale of our national ivory stock.
Global trade in ivory has been banned since 1989 by CITES, an international body that monitors endangered species. Officials in Zimbabwe say the elephant population has since grown to 100,000. A conservation marvel, but one that's led to environmental destruction and increased attacks on humans.
This is a success story where we have managed to grow our elephant population from where it was in the 70s, which is less than 5,000, to something which is more than 1,000 times more to where we sit today. That in itself demonstrates a success. But that success needs to be controlled one way or the other.
Countries in southern Africa want to be able to sell ivory acquired through natural animal deaths, as well as confiscations and culling. They have the support of nations where ivory is popular, like China and Japan. But many governments and animal rights organizations believe lifting the ban risks a return to the slaughter that's decimated many species.
That's a very great danger, you know, to our already endangered species, you know, elephants that are threatened with the extinction, rhinos that are also threatened with the extinction in many parts around the world.
Others question who would benefit from a ban.
The theory behind selling ivory is fine. An elephant dies of natural causes, you collect the ivory, you sell it, and the proceeds go back to local communities. The sad reality is that it just hasn't worked that way. Once you have a market in ivory, you have a high value placed on ivory, it does stimulate poaching.
That's a view born from experience. When one-off ivory sales were allowed in the late 1990s and again in 2008, poaching escalated across Africa. Leah Harding reporting for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests in Harare. Tinashe Farao is spokesman for the Zimbabwe Parks and Wildlife Management Authority. In Dorking, Will Traverse is a conservationist and executive president of the Born Free Foundation. Welcome to the program. Tinashe, why is selling Zimbabwe's stockpile of seized ivory crucial for conservation?
Thank you very much. I think the world needs to understand is we have had a successful story in terms of managing our wildlife. What we are seeing is a result of good management practices for many, many years. And it's not the majority of that ivory doesn't come from recoveries from poachers, but the majority of that ivory comes from natural mortality. These animals, they're just like you and me, they die and we retrieve the ivory for safekeeping. What is important for us to create value from the ivory that we have been keeping for many, many years is not only for the benefit of the authority, but also for the benefit of the communities who bear the brunt of sharing borders with wildlife. These are the people who are killed every day by these animals. These are the people whose crops are destroyed. These are the people whose livelihoods are destroyed by these animals. So if we sell this ivory, we are not only going to capacitate our conservation efforts, we are also going to ensure that our communities benefit. We are also going to ensure that we are going to build schools for our people, roads, clinics, in communities where the animals are. Mm-hmm. Conservation is an expensive business. The elephants that we are talking about in Zimbabwe, they are not an accident of history. They are a result of hard work, investment into this, into our wildlife. I've spoken about getting ivory from natural mortality. If you are flying, for example, around a national park, you see a dead elephant, you need to ask people to go and collect that ivory. And it takes money to drive vehicles for 100, 150 kilometers where there are no roads to go and pick that ivory. You keep it in a stockpile, expecting that at least you can get something out of it. There's fuel which is used to go and collect that ivory. There are people who do all those things. There are people who do our law enforcement, our anti-poaching patrols. They need resources. We need vehicles. We need helicopters just for patrol to make sure that this success story is maintained. So it needs money to look after the animals.
Okay. Well, in theory, what Zimbabwe, Botswana, and many other countries are saying makes perfect sense. They're saying that basically they have the stockpile of tusks, rhino horns, which they want to sell because it's going to generate hundreds of millions of dollars. With that money, they will be able to improve the standards for the conservation of the growing elephant population.
Yes, unfortunately, I fundamentally disagree with all of that. I'm entirely sympathetic to the authorities in terms of their need to find innovative financing mechanisms to carry out their conservation agenda, and also to the communities who desperately need additional support. But it's not going to come from selling ivory. The figures that have been bandied around, you yourself have just mentioned a figure of 600 million. Let's remind ourselves that the sale of 50 tons of ivory in 1999 generated just $5 million. And the sale of 102 tons of ivory in 2009 generated just $15 million US dollars. And if the reports of the amount of ivory in the Zimbabwe stockpile, 130 tons or so, are true, they might, were there even a market, they might realize maybe $20 million, which would get consumed in paying off the deficit in the operating costs of the Zimbabwe National Parks. There is no market. China does not have a domestic ivory market anymore. The USA does not have a domestic ivory market. The EU has just tightened up its domestic ivory market guidelines, and the UK is about to bring in a virtual ban on the domestic sale of ivory on June the 6th. The only places that Zimbabwe, were it to get the support of the international community, which I honestly will tell you it won't, the only place it would be able to sell that ivory is to non-parties to CITES. And there are only about nine of them, including some very small island states and North Korea. I just cannot see this as a viable route. So we must go beyond this discussion and look for better ways of supporting African elephant range states, by the way, the majority of whom are opposed to any international commercial sale of ivory. And we must go beyond those discussions and start looking for ways of innovatively financing the conservation of elephants and the support for local communities.
Tinashe, so this is the thing. This is the concern that the international community has about allowing the sale of the stockpile of ivory, because they say this is just going to lead to another poaching epidemic in the African continent.
You know, there's no evidence to that. Rhino horn trade has been banned since 1975, but it has not stopped poaching of rhino. In fact, it's on the increase. if we are going to legalize what we have, it means there will be no need for people to illegally trade in ivory, because the market will be saturated. The market will be, obviously, will meet the market because the ivory is there. It will continue to be there for eternity because the animals are there. They grow old, they die, we retrieve the ivory. So the market will remain there. What we want to do is to make sure that we sustainably manage our resource. How are we sustainably managing our resource? We need to ensure that we create value, we monetize, so that people see incentives in terms of looking after these animals. As I'm speaking to you now, we have lost 35 lives from January in terms of human wildlife conflict. Last year, we lost 68. And hundreds others are injured. It's a pain to us. It's a great pain to look after this. And there's no evidence. There's no science. And what we are simply appealing to the international community is listen to science. Listen to what science is saying, and let's follow science. Let's make decisions based on science. Let's make decisions based on research. Let's make decisions based on evidence, not to use emotions, not to politicize this issue. Animals know no politics. They know no boundary. Mm-hmm. And what we are simply saying is we must at least for once allow us to create value out of the resource that we have. If we do that, we also ensure that our communities benefit. Like I said, these are the people who are killed every day. These are the people who are losing their lives almost every day. They have nothing to show for it. And at the end of the day, when people use emotions to make decisions, and by the way, people must know that Africa is not monolithic. What is happening in Southern Africa is not what is happening in North Africa, East mm-hmm. Africa, West Africa, or across the continent. And when we say our elephants are overpopulated, these are not thumbs-up mm-hmm. figures. There's evidence to that. And that evidence must be respected. We do researches, we find out this is what we have. Wange National Park, for example, is 14,620 square kilometers. One elephant, one square kilometer. We are sitting on more than 45,000, which means we've more than doubled the maximum ecological carrying capacity of that park and many other parks around the country. And when we say these things, it hurts us when we see how much loss we are suffering in terms of habitat, because you know the elephants have a tendency of knocking down trees. And they are moving around destroying trees because they are overpopulated. And they're not only affecting only one species, the elephant. We have vultures, which are also facing extinction. And because they can only breed in a certain tree height. And because the elephants, they knock down trees, mm-hmm. it means the breeding cycle of vultures is affected. We have giraffes, which also favor some certain trees like acacia. The trees are not there. So it's a disaster waiting to happen. It's not only about the elephants that we're talking about. And to us, we think we must be rewarded. We deserve a pat on the back, not the slap that we are getting. Let's listen to science. Let's follow science.
Well, now, one of the arguments advanced by the advocates of lifting the ban on the ivory trade is that the money generated, although there is no general consensus about the value of that money generated, will end up being distributed among the local community, which thrives and lives around the national parks in the African continent. If you do that, you will help them fight against poaching. If you don't do that, they will just rely on poaching to survive themselves.
Well, this is an argument that's been put forward by those countries that practice what's called community-based natural resource management, CBNRM. And one of the most recent reports, my fellow guest talks about evidence. One of the most recent reports looking into the values of community-based natural resource management at the site level. In other words, what does it mean for those individuals who live around protected areas? What do they get out of it? And the answer is almost nothing. We're talking about entire communities that benefit at a level of sometimes less than $1 per person per year. Your guest also talks about there being no evidence that renewing the international commercial trade in ivory would lead to further poaching of elephants. I beg to differ. Please look at what happened in Tanzania in 2010 to 2014, following the one-off sale that took place in 2009, Tanzania lost 1,000 elephants every month on average for 5 years. they lost 60,000 elephants, more than 60,000 elephants, in the 5 years that followed the last time we had a one-off sale, a one-off commercial sale of ivory. Evidence to the other side is look at what's going on in Kenya, which had a massive problem with poaching of elephants, which meant that its elephant population was just over 16,000 in 1989. Today, the elephant population has more than doubled. It is 35,000, and there is no appetite in Kenya for a return to the ivory trade, and indeed, there is no commercial trophy hunting of elephants or other species either.
Tinashe, you've heard what Will has just said, which is basically there is no consensus among African nations about how to move forward. The Kenyans, for example, are saying that the problem with lifting the ban is they're just going to remove the stigma associated with buying ivory. If you do that, you just open the gate for the smugglers, for the gangsters, for the criminal syndicates to thrive once again in the African continent.
I think I've given you an example that I think there's a problem when the world treats Africa as if it's monolithic. Why didn't the guest give examples of what is happening in Zimbabwe? Because what happens in Zimbabwe is different from what happens in other countries. We are on our own when it comes to looking after our elephants. And we are left to rot, to regret. Like, it's a great pain to boast of these numbers of animals, of elephants, for no benefit. It's important. I've mentioned it earlier that there's no evidence that banning of ivory will stop poaching. 1975, rhino horn trade was banned, but it's on the increase for more than 40 years now. There's no that evidence. As a country or as a region, we've put mechanisms in place that we fight poaching. We have reduced poaching by more than 80%. How did you do that? We have put systems in place to make sure that we monitor our parks. We do law enforcement. We do a lot of anti-poaching. We are working with our judiciary. And the punishment that people get for possession of ivory, they are deterrent enough. And the poaching incidents have been on the increase over the last 5 years. And that's the good work that we are doing. Because we are working with the law enforcement agents, the police, we are working with the judiciary, our magistrate, to appreciate wildlife crimes. And all this effort, like I said, it needs to be supported. How do you support that? How do you support communities? Communities which are living around these parks, when they are not benefiting, they will definitely allow poachers because they're not getting anything. If poachers come, they will not alert the authorities because they're not getting anything. But if they derive something, they see the animals as an economic opportunity, there are roads being constructed, their children are getting jobs. I think it's not fair for a villager who is in Mbire or in Wange today who is not getting even a single cent. And this decision, it's sad, it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. They're being made by people in some air-conditioned offices in London, in New York. Some of them, they've never seen an elephant in their life. They don't know how it feels to compete for water with animals. They don't know how it feels for a herd of elephants invading your crops. And these are livelihoods that are being destroyed. And when you say these things, we are simply saying we are open, we are transparent. Okay. People can still come and see for themselves. Only a fortnight ago, we have had these ambassadors from Europe too, just to appreciate, because some of them, they don't even believe that we have that kind of a stockpile. And people are making these decisions somewhere in Geneva, somewhere far, far, far away from what is happening. So people must come and see for themselves. They make decisions based on evidence, because what we are saying is what is happening on the ground.
All right.
Our elephants are overpopulated. And it's important to note that this country that we call Zimbabwe is not expanding. We have had an increase in terms of human population, more than double from 1980, let's say 40 years ago. The animal population have also more than doubled for the past 40 years, but the country is not expanding. How are we going to share the resource? And it's a great pain, like I say, to us to look after these animals.
Let me go.
We thought it's a source of pride.
I see your point. Let me go to Will. Sorry? Will, grappling with how to move forward when it comes to the lifting of the ban, the CITES, which is the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, in 1999 and 2008 tried the one-off sales. And they said this was going to be the unique way to ensure a steady supply of stockpiled ivory into the international market. But then there was a divided legacy about what happened next.
Yes, and I think if we're going to learn the lessons of history, then we have to learn from those two one-off sales and what happened to elephants subsequently. The Great Elephant Census of 2016 indicates that the number of elephants in Africa is now standing at around 400,000, down from over 600,000 when the first ban was brought in 1989. Your guest talks about Africa not being homogeneous, and of course he's absolutely right. But what happens in one country, if one country is successful in persuading the international community to restart the international ivory trade, can have dire consequences for elephant populations across the entire continent, which is why the vast majority of African elephant range states, members of the African Elephant Coalition, are against any further trade. We must find a way of moving forward. And there is, you know, there are opportunities. For example, research carried out by Ralph Shammy of the International Monetary Fund indicates that the ecosystem services provided by an individual elephant in terms of its ability to sequester carbon throughout its lifetime put a monetary value, which your guest is very keen on pointing out, mm-hmm. a monetary value on that elephant of $1.7 million across its lifespan. So by keeping that elephant alive, we are able to realize ecosystem services to the value of $1.75 million. It's a process that is in its infancy, but if we can accelerate that, and I believe that there will be a pilot program for this particular initiative happening in West Africa later this year, then those mm-hmm. communities, those very communities that he talks about, the communities that do desperately need support, opportunities, clinics, roads, educational facilities, could benefit by a significant amount of money by keeping their elephants alive and protecting them from poachers rather than the one-off dividend that happens when an elephant is poached.
Tinashe, there is absolutely no doubt the great effort you've been doing and the conservationists, the NGOs have been doing in the African continent. You do understand at the same time that the problem with the if you allow for this type of ban lifting, it's just going to pave the way for the illegal ivory to be laundered into the legal market, which is going to create a massive problem. Do you think this is going to be the moment for you to think about different ways to be able to generate the cash you'd be looking forward to have to maintain the work you've been doing?
You know what is important is for people to understand what we are going through as a country. Not what, you know, this reference of treating us as if Africa is Zimbabwe, yet Zimbabwe or Southern Africa is part of Africa. What we are simply saying to the international community is, listen to science. What is science telling us? Let's follow science. Let's not use emotion. Let's not use politics. It's important to note, people are giving examples. The fellow guest is talking about what happened in Tanzania, what happened in Kenya. Those things did not happen in Zimbabwe. We are simply saying, treat us differently. One size fits all doesn't work. Rhino hound trade has been banned since 1975. What is happening? One size fits all doesn't work. What works? Let's do analysis, individual country, the challenges that we are going through, what needs to be done as a country, individually, and primarily as a region, as SADC. Because if you look at the 400,000 remaining elephants that have remained in Africa, more than two-thirds of them are in Southern Africa. And we are doing something right to make sure that at least we keep this resource.
Thank you.
It's said that people would not even have the elephants. I'm making decisions on people who do have elephants. I've always said we would rather take maybe 2,000 elephants. They can roam freely in London. They can roam freely in New York. You can take them. And so that you know how it feels. A parent every night, he spends the whole night, lions roaring, elephants moving around. You know the next day you want to send your children to school. And apart from that, we are losing our habitat, we are losing our trees, and most of these things, like I said, conservation is expensive. Most of our parks, they are run on 100% bore water, and it needs money to do that.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but in the meantime, Tinashe Farao and Will Travers, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Hashim Al-Barra, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.